What transforms a poor agricultural nation into an industrial powerhouse? In 1950, South Korea and the Philippines had nearly identical GDP per capita, around $800 to $1,000. Today, South Koreans enjoy incomes exceeding $30,000, while Filipinos remain below $4,000. This dramatic divergence wasn't due to culture, geography, or luck. It followed a specific three-part formula that successful Asian economies implemented with ruthless precision. When Singapore's Lee Kuan Yew was asked about East Asia's extraordinary rise, he replied simply, "You must have land reform, export-oriented industrialization, and financial discipline." This deceptively straightforward recipe, when properly executed, produced the most remarkable economic transformations in modern history. The divergence between Northeast Asia, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, China, and Southeast Asia, Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, represents one of history's most illuminating natural experiments in development economics. Starting from similar positions after World War II, these nations took dramatically different paths, with consequences that continue to shape global economics and geopolitics today. Imagine feeding your family from a backyard garden, maximizing every inch with indoor seedlings, regulated soil temperature, targeted fertilizer, dense planting, and vertical trellises. This gardening approach describes Northeast Asian agriculture perfectly, where small family farms achieved yields that large plantations couldn't match. When Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and later China implemented radical land reform after World War II, they broke the cycle of landlord exploitation by dividing agricultural land equally among farming families. Agricultural output increased 50 to 75% in just 10-15 years. These small farms, typically 1 hectare or less, functioned as highly productive gardens, with yields far exceeding large-scale operations. In Taiwan, smallholders outperformed large estates in plantation crops like sugar and bananas by 40 to 50%. This agricultural abundance created markets for early industrial products, preserved foreign exchange for industrial investment, and provided crucial social mobility. South Korea's President Park Chung-hee, Hyundai founder Chung Ju-young, and Taiwan's industrialist Wang Yung-ching all came from farming backgrounds, mobility almost non-existent in Southeast Asia. The Philippines demonstrates how agricultural policy failure undermines development. Despite numerous land reform plans since 1904, the Filipino elite has circumvented meaningful reform through legal maneuvering and political influence. Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law in 1972 partly to implement land reform, yet achieved less than 25% of his limited targets. This pattern continued under Corazon Aquino, whose family's 6,400-hectare Hacienda Luisita exploited loopholes to maintain control. Agriculture alone cannot sustain economic growth. Countries must transition to manufacturing, which offers unlimited potential for technological advancement and productivity gains. Manufacturing helps poor countries by using machines to compensate for limited human skills while providing access to global markets and technologies. Northeast Asian economies succeeded through export discipline, protecting domestic manufacturers while requiring them to export and face global competition. This created a feedback loop. Firms upgraded technology to meet international standards, while policymakers received clear signals about which industries deserved support. South Korea under Park Chung-hee exemplifies this approach. After his 1961 coup, Park directed entrepreneurs toward manufacturing investments. Hyundai's founder quickly built a cement plant in 1962 and began exporting within a year. When developing Hyundai's first independent car, the company insisted on receiving the same engine Mitsubishi used, a crucial step toward technological independence. By 2010, Hyundai had become the world's fourth largest auto group. Malaysia under Mahathir Mohamad attempted to copy Korea but failed. His 1981 Look East policy missed the crucial element, export discipline. His national car project, Proton, formed a joint venture with Mitsubishi rather than pursuing technological independence. Without competition or export requirements, Proton remained globally uncompetitive. The results are telling. When Mahathir became Malaysia's premier in 1981, both countries had identical per capita incomes of approximately $1,500. By 2008, Korea's had reached $21,530, while Malaysia's grew to only $7,250. The difference was the systematic application of export discipline that forced Korean companies to achieve global competitiveness. Financial systems in developing economies need tight control to serve developmental purposes rather than chase profits. Successful Northeast Asian economies maintain strict oversight of banking, limited international capital flows, and directed credit toward productive sectors. Korea's approach under Park Chan-hee proved particularly effective. After renationalizing banks in 1961, he implemented unlimited rediscounting of export loans. The cheapest loans went to exporters at negative real interest rates, effectively paying them to borrow. Depositors received minimal interest, creating a hidden taxation system that funded industrial development. Southeast Asian countries failed to maintain similar discipline. The Philippines' banking system became a kleptocracy, with banks serving as personal piggy banks for business families. Malaysia and Thailand prematurely deregulated their financial systems, triggering speculative booms. The consequences became evident during the 1997 Asian financial crisis. Thailand, the IMF's star pupil in financial deregulation, suffered the worst initial contraction, depleting foreign reserves defending the baht before letting it float, which marked the start of the crisis and revealed the dangers of premature financial liberalization. In Negros Occidental's Sugarlandia, undernourished cane cutters earn just $2.60 for backbreaking daily labor. Today, 8.5 million of 11.2 million rural workers remain landless. The economic impact is clear. Philippine sugar yields average only 56 tons per hectare versus 85-90 tons in Taiwan and China. Similarly, agricultural value added per hectare is just $655 in the Philippines compared to $2,500 in China, $5,000 in Taiwan, and $10,000 in Japan. This agricultural failure has triggered rural unemployment, urban migration, and social unrest while hampering the capital accumulation and skills development needed for industrial growth. The Philippines stands as a cautionary tale of development failure caused by powerful elites blocking essential land reforms. China's economic rise since 1978 has followed the Northeast Asian development model with socialist adaptations. Like its neighbors, China began with agricultural reform, replacing collective farming with household plots, a change that increased output by over one-third in the early 1980s and created a rural workforce surplus for industrial development. Manufacturing evolved in phases. Rural township and village enterprises flourished in the 1980s, followed by Zhu Rongji's Grasp the Big, Let Go the Small rationalization from 1993. Which cut about 40 million state jobs between 1995-2004. Simultaneously, Zhu fostered competition by breaking up monopolies and creating competitive oligopolies in strategic sectors. China has developed a distinctive hybrid model for state-owned enterprises that outperforms those of other Asian nations. However, its state manufacturing model succeeds primarily in midstream, business-to-business activities, while struggling in consumer markets, where innovation and responsiveness are essential. East Asian economic success follows a consistent formula: household farming, export-oriented manufacturing, and tightly controlled finance extracting beyond initial skill levels. Markets aren't inherently efficient, but are shaped by political power and institutional frameworks. Historical evidence shows successful development requires two approaches: developmental economics with managed competition early on, then efficiency economics with freer markets later. International institutions often pressure developing countries to publicly endorse free markets while quietly implementing necessary interventionist policies. No significant economy, including Britain, the United States, Germany, or Japan, developed through free trade and deregulation from the start. Today's developing nations must implement this proven model despite trade agreements and institutions that restrict policy space. The path to prosperity requires pragmatic policies that harness market forces while directing them toward national development goals. Economic development isn't a mystery, it's a choice requiring political courage and policy discipline.